Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, Scotland the Brave. Safer drug consumption facilities are supervised healthcare settings where people can use drugs obtained elsewhere in the presence of trained health and social care professionals in clean, hygienic environments. The service aims to reduce the negative impact that injecting outdoors has on local residents, communities, and businesses, to reduce the harms associated with injecting drugs on individuals, and to support people to access help to improve their lives. The Thistle, a safer drug consumption site located in Glasgow, Scotland, is the first of its kind in the United Kingdom. The Thistle opened Monday, January 13, 2025. It's open all year round from 9 in the morning until 9 at night. On Wednesday, May 7th, the UK Parliament's Scottish Affairs Committee held a hearing entitled Problem Drug Use in Scotland Follow-up, Glasgow's Safer Drug Consumption Facility. The committee was looking at the approach being taken by police and prosecutors toward the facility, so the witnesses were police and prosecutors. Superintendent Joanne McEwen with Police Scotland and the Right Honourable Dorothy Bain, KC, Lord Advocate, Crown Office and Procurator, Fiscal Service, along with Jenny Hamilton, a senior legal manager in policy and engagement at the COPFS. For the benefit of American listeners, the Lord Advocate is a minister of the Scottish Government, appointed by the Queen on the recommendation of the First Minister of Scotland, with the agreement of the Scottish Parliament. The Lord Advocate is the ministerial head of the Crown Office and Procurator Fiscal Service, leading the system of criminal prosecutions and the investigation of deaths. All prosecutions on indictment run in the Lord Advocate's name. The current Lord Advocate, Dorothy Bain, KC, Casey, by the way, stands for King's Counsel, was appointed in June 2021. The hearing begins with questioning by committee members. Members of Parliament present at this hearing include Maureen Burke, Harriet Cross, Stephen Flynn, Douglas McAllister, Jack Rankin, Elaine Stewart, Kirstine Sullivan, and the chair of the committee, whose voice you'll hear in a moment, is Patricia Ferguson. In the first part of the hearing, the witnesses are Dorothy Bain, KC, and Jenny Hamilton.
We are going to be looking at questions arising from the Thistle drug, safer drug consumption space in Glasgow. The committee has visited the Thistle and has already taken some evidence on the operation. And we've also visited the safer drug consumption spaces in both Oslo and Bergen. So we're very interested to hear what you have to tell us today. So I wondered if I could kick off by asking what legal risks are associated with the operation of the Thistle and in what ways your statement of prosecution policy addresses them, Lord Advocate.
Well, I suppose it's helpful just to start off by explaining broadly what a statement of prosecution policy is. It is an instruction to prosecutors as to the public interest in taking a particular response in a particular context. It is a statement of the way that the public interest considerations relevant to a specifically prosecutorial decision, which are generally identified by the Scottish Prosecution Code, would fall to be applied by prosecutors in a particular context. In this context is a statement that it would not be in the public interest to prosecuting users of the Glasgow Safer Drug Consumption Facility for possession of drugs for personal use. In terms of legal risks for the facility itself, I was not asked to sign off on how the facility itself was operated, and it wouldn't be appropriate for me to do so. And so any statement of prosecution policy should not be construed as a ban on prosecution of offences under the Misuse of Drugs Act 1971. And it shouldn't be construed as prosecutors not enforcing the law. And it doesn't represent an immunity from prosecution provided in advance. So that is the statement of prosecution policy. That is broadly what it is and probably broadly what it applies to. In terms of the legal risks for the operators of the facility, that is those operating the facility to consider and guard against in terms of their standing operating procedures.
Would you expect those operating at the City Council and the Health Board, etc., to have regard to your prosecution statement and to measure their activity against that, in effect?
So, I suppose it's important to know what the statement of prosecution policy covers and why it's needed, and then think about how that impacts on those operating the safer consumption facility. So the statement covers simple possession offences under Section 5.2 of the Misuse of Drugs Act 1971. It only applies where the controlled substance is intended for personal consumption, that is not drug dealing or possession with intent to supply. And it only applies to cases where the controlled substance is recovered within the boundaries of the facility. And it only applies when the person is attending the facility. It wouldn't cover, for example, medical professionals working there who are found in possession of drugs or indeed are committing any other offence under the Misuse of Drugs Act or indeed any other offence. The prosecution policy only covers the duration of the pilot, and it doesn't cover offences detected outside of the facility or on the way to the facility, and these are dealt with in the normal course. So for those who are operating the facility, they obviously are seeking to engender a confidence in the users coming forward to the facility in order that they can be provided with the safe space, hygienic, supportive space to administer drugs if that's what they wish to do, but also to engender confidence in seeking the other available resources within the centre that would direct those vulnerable individuals to support mechanisms, support systems, and indeed safe spaces, hygienic spaces, washing facilities and the like. So I suppose for those operating the facility, all they need to do is to ensure that they operate it within the law, within the standing operating procedures that they've set down, and they recognise that for those who are coming with possession of drugs, that they are, on the face of it, breaching the law, but there is a prosecution policy in place that means these individuals won't face prosecution, they won't be brought before the courts. And it's hoped that this combination of the statement alongside the way that the facility operates delivers ultimately what the aim of the facility is for, which is to reduce public drug use, reduce drug deaths, and hopefully identify a route for vulnerable people to gain help and support that they require.
That's helpful, thank you. I'm going to pass to Harriet Cross.
Thank you, and good morning, thank you for coming in. I think we've touched on it a bit there, but I think I'd quite like to explore a bit further sort of the reasons why possession is the only offence covered by the prosecution policy. Is there a reason why this is the only one, and is there any scope or reason that you could see that this may or may not be extended to other offences, and what would the impact of this potentially be?
So, I think it's important to understand the law are in around and the constraints in around the Lord Advocate's prosecution policy and the statements involved in that. A statement of prosecution policy requires to be carefully defined, publicly stated, and capable of being enforced without any form of difficulty. And to be lawful, it has to meet these necessary standards of a policy that's clear, readily understood, and publicly available. A wide-ranging statement that would relate to a number of offences that might or might not be committed within the facility by those who are working there and those who are attending there, such as being concerned in the supply of drugs or assisting in administering drugs. That's far too wide a ranging concept for a statement of public prosecution policy to be made. It wouldn't be lawful. And the law requires the statement is very focused and easily understood. There are numerous examples over the history of Lord Advocate's statements of in these matters that we can provide examples to you for in relation to, for example, where an individual was in a persistent vegetative state and the doctors had identified that they wouldn't be resuscitated in certain circumstances. There's statements of public prosecution policy in and around the provision of safe needles and in relation to the use of naloxone. But it would just not have been lawful to provide a wide-ranging statement that wasn't readily understood. So why is it needed in this case? Why is the prosecution policy needed in this case? And what I understand is the proposers, in relation to the facility, took legal advice and are content that they could operate within the current legal framework, except insofar as the users of the facility would be in possession of controlled substances. In normal course, if an individual is reported for simple possession offences, a range of options, including prosecution, is open to prosecutors. And for individual reported simple possession offences, I would expect prosecutors to consider the potential use of diversion from prosecution for very vulnerable individuals. They may also consider offering a fine, and indeed some cases, and of course prosecution may be a possibility. So this provides reassurance to those attending the facility that they will not come into the criminal justice process, which we know seriously upends an individual's life. They will not be fined, and there's no potential for prosecution. And the statement, therefore, puts the particular prosecutorial response to possession of drug offences in this specific context beyond doubt, providing what I hope is the confidence to those seeking the support of the facility that they can do so without the risk of prosecution.
Okay, thank you. I understand what you're saying. I think the difficulty is that possession is one thing, but obviously there's a huge number of other areas within drug policy or within public prosecution policy in which drug offences fall. They're not just possession. There are a wide range of things, many of which you've touched on already. Where does the balance lie between what happens within a facility and what happens out with a facility? And how can we ensure that people working in the facility, people using the facility, people on the outside looking at the facility and what's actually happening there, how can they have assurance and reassurance that we are not effectively, to an extent that we are, but we're not advocating any more relaxation of drug policy or anything that comes from that? We've talked about possession, but things, for example, that happen because of the use of drugs. So, for example, we know that it leads to higher murder rates, manslaughter rates, public disturbances. How do these get separated from actually removing the prosecutorial element of the possession to actually other elements of drug taking and the impacts of that has on the community, which may happen out with the facility, but as a result of the drugs being taken?
Yeah, so it's a question that I think probably should be directed to those who operate the facility, because the standard operating procedures and the reassurances that I was given by those operating facility was that they could operate the facility within the law, and the only challenge that presented was that in relation to the individuals presenting with drugs and requiring the support to administer these in the safer facility. So the question of other areas of criminality, indeed within the facility or without, these remain subject to the same sort of prosecutorial decisions, the same sort of police response that one would expect in any other circumstance. So I think it's really important to understand the key difference between what was originally asked of the previous Lord Advocate and what is being asked now. Because the scheme that the then Lord Advocate was previously asked to consider by the Glasgow Health and Social Care Partnership was one in which he was asked to give a blanket immunity for all criminal offences. And that simply couldn't be done because you rightly identify the risks associated with drug use means that there is a risk of further offending, including, sadly, as we know, circumstances where individuals are exposed to the criminal prosecution for culpable homicide. But so the wide-ranging request and the fact that there's a whole gamut of offences that could be committed, simply, it wouldn't have been capable of being met by a limited and targeted statement of prosecution policy. And that's all that has been given here. A limited, targeted statement of prosecution policy for a pilot that will be re-evaluated in accordance with the work that's been done by those operating facility. It's simply not open, and it's not lawful for a Lord Advocate to issue a wide-ranging immunity from prosecution in advance of the conduct taking place.
We're listening to portions of a hearing being held by the UK Parliament's Scottish Affairs Committee. The hearing's entitled Problem Drug Use in Scotland Follow-up, Glasgow's Safer Drug Consumption Facility. We've just heard testimony from the Crown's Prosecution Office, represented by the Right Honourable Dorothy Bain KC, Lord Advocate in the COPFS, and Jenny Hamilton, Senior Legal Manager, Policy and Engagement. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We heard from prosecutors and their perspective on the thistle. Now let's hear from the police. The other witness who testified before the committee was Superintendent Joanne McEwen with Police Scotland. Again, chair of the committee is Patricia Ferguson, MP.
We're now resuming this session looking at safer drug consumption rooms, specifically the thistle in Glasgow. And we welcome Superintendent Joanne McEwen from Police Scotland, who's here to give us evidence this morning too. So good morning, Superintendent. Thank you very much for being here. Could I ask you in opening to characterise how Police Scotland's approach to the policing of the Thistle Centre?
Yeah, of course. And thank you for having me this morning. What I'll do, if it's helpful, is just give an overview of really the two main aspects. So how we would deal with incidents reported within the centre and how we would deal with incidents reported outside. So excuse me while I refer to my notes. So as the Lord Advocate has explained this morning, there's no change to the law, and possession of drugs within the facility remains a criminal offence, and we've been very clear on that throughout. But of course, the statement of prosecution policy clearly states it wouldn't be in the public interest to prosecute users of the facility for a simple possession offence. A couple of points that I would like to highlight just before I go into a little bit more detail about how we deal with incidents is that attendance at the facility, so persons on their way attending the facility, can't use that attendance as an offence, as a defence, apologies. There's no tolerance zone, as I know the Lord Advocate explained this morning, and that the statement relates to the footprint. And we've been very clear in developing the guidance alongside the proposers to clarify exactly what the footprint of the facility means. Again, another important point, and apologies, there might be some repetition this morning, that notwithstanding the statement of prosecution policy, all decisions made in terms of prosecution are for Crown and is not a matter for Police Scotland. So our role is to report matters to COPFS in that regard, and that's been the cornerstone of the guidance that we've developed. So I'll start with possession-only offences, and that's the Section 5(2) Misuse of Drugs Act. So recorded police warnings, they're not used for users of the facility found in possession of drugs. So we will not use a recorded police warning, which can often be described as a direct measure. Where officers detect an offence and seize a suspected controlled substance, they will submit a report to the Procurator Fiscal. And it's a particular type of report where we will be seeking advice and guidance. So we'll be seeking advice and guidance from COPFS in terms of how they would like us to proceed, and that's where they make that prosecutorial decision. This applies only for a simple Section 5(2) offence where there is no other offending. And it's obviously clear and important that when we're submitting that report, that the connection to the Safer Drug Consumption Facility will be made clear in the report. So I'll move on now to talk about other types of offences. I'll start with possession offences outside the footprint of the facility. So they will be reported as normal as they ever would be. That could be by a recorded police warning, or it could be a standard prosecution report, and that will be a decision for the officer based on the prevailing circumstances. Moving back into the footprint, should we attend an incident where there are a number of offences, so perhaps a broader offence, for example, a theft or threatening behaviour, for example, and in the course of dealing with that incident, officers also detect a suspected controlled substance, so a Section 5(2) offence. All matters would be reported together via standard prosecution report to the Procurator Fiscal, and again making very clear through the case reporting mechanism that these incidents relate to the Safer Drug Consumption Facility. What that allows our colleagues in Crown to do is apply the statement of prosecution policy as they see fit to the Section 5(2) offence contained within that broader number of offences. Any offences detected within the facility where there is no possession offence, there's no Section 5(2) offence, they will be reported and dealt with in the normal manner. The reporting mechanisms, as I touched on earlier, as we've worked through the guidance, have been set up in such a way to ensure that we can call out very clearly to colleagues in Crown that any incident, whether it's a simple possession offence or a broader offence, has got that connection to the SDCF. In addition, we provide a report on a weekly basis to colleagues at Crown so that they can be very clear as to whether or not there have been any incidents for them to report. And as I said earlier, in any cases that are covered by the statement or prosecution policy, we will seek advice and guidance from Crown as to any further action required from police. I think it's really important to say, as I sit here and speak to you today, there have been no crimes, there have been no incidents. We do provide a weekly report, but it is a nil return thus far.
That's helpful. I just wonder if it's a particular challenge for officers who police in that area to understand that this is a slightly different scenario from the one they might face in another part of the city. Is that something you've had to be aware of, or you've had to brief officers specifically around?
We certainly have briefed officers specifically. I think it's important to say, and we probably all acknowledge, that it's a novel approach, first time in the UK. And so for that reason, for myself and my team, and we work primarily in strategic policy and harm prevention, not in local policing at the moment, but have worked very closely with them throughout the development of the guidance. And what's been important for me and my team...
I have no idea what that is, but I think it might have something to do with
the
meeting.
That could go on for some time. We might have to carry on.
I think we might just try to ignore it if we can. It's maybe asking a bit much, but...
Should we shut the windows, Chair?
That would help, thank you. And sorry to have interrupted you, Superintendent McCune. These are things we can't, unfortunately, do very much about. But I think you were explaining to us about the challenges of policing in the area.
Yes, and as I was saying, it's been really important for myself and my team to give officers the clarity that they need to really understand what we're asking them to do, but also what we're asking them not to do as it pertains to the guidance. So in order to do that, we've worked very closely with colleagues in G Division, where the Hunter Street facility is based. We've had a very robust governance structure that has been in place over around the last 18 months. And we've also carried out robust testing and exercising. And we started that with local officers, so frontline sergeants, constables, who will be policing that area. and had what we refer to as tabletop exercise at that level. We then took that internally to police-only wider tabletop exercising, and that included, for example, colleagues in CGSD, our Criminal Justice Department, colleagues in C3, our Contact Command and Control, colleagues in crime, in terms of crime management, and we did that at that level. And then we took that testing one stage further into a multi-agency context where we had partners involved as well. At each level, local officers being able to influence not necessarily the approach, but the clarity with how we explained what we were asking of them. And SMART 2 were very helpful in terms of leading those tabletop exercises for us. And that helped us because I think when you work in a space, it can be very clear to you, but may not be clear to other people. So I am confident, and the feedback certainly that I have from local officers is that there is a clear understanding of the guidance.
It's good to know. Thank you very much. I'll pass now to my colleague Maureen Burke.
Thank you, and thank you for coming along today. I think a lot of what I was going to ask has been covered in what you were you know speaking about there. But one of the questions I was going to ask is about the local people in the area. Have you had many complaints from them about maybe what issues, if any, have been happening there? I know that also I was going to ask about the impact it's got on the level of resources that you've got. Is that enough? So I think everything else I was going to ask has actually been covered.
In terms of local people, we, at a point in time in the stages of the implementation, so towards the end, supported partners in Glasgow Health and Care, Health and Social Care Partnership, in their community engagement, because there were questions for police, questions around how we would continue to police a local area, and we felt it was important for us to go along and support that so that, that people could get those messages straight and direct from us. Local officers, and particularly community officers, continue to engage with community. You'll know that that's a central part of the policing model in Scotland. And what's good about that is that it allows us to meet community needs, whatever they may be in the area around the Thistle or elsewhere. Before I came, as you would expect, in preparation for today, spoke with the leadership in the division to understand whether there were any ongoing concerns. There aren't that they're aware of, but it's important that we remain engaged and remain open. The Lord Advocate spoke earlier this morning about the evaluation. That's important, and that we will contribute to that evaluation so that it can be robust and helpful.
That's really good. Thanks for that, because I know it was quite problematic at the start to get community engagement, but it's good to know that that's still going on. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
That was Police Scotland Superintendent Joanne McEwen testifying before the UK Parliament's Scottish Affairs Committee at a hearing May 7th entitled Problem Drug Use in Scotland Follow-up, Glasgow's Safer Drug Consumption Facility. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!